Now, get ready for Uncensored Sports Madness. It's Dave in the City on Lux of the Week Radio.
Coast to coast, internet sports talk, Lux of the Week.
Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Let him play!
Yeah, everybody have a show today. We had snow today, show today, show tomorrow.
I don't know if you want that on your credit card bill. You know, saying the WWE Network on it. I mean, like,
your dad could look at it and be like, Dave, you have something to tell me?
That's the story that they still play.
Unbelievable!
You have your LeBron in the filet. It's like, do you really care about the James Jones at the end of the bench against Tatum?
Maybe the board, the MikeFrancesa.com, was just ahead of its time.
Pioneers.
Exactly, yeah.
Pioneers, if you will. Yeah.
We listen to this guy sit at a desk and picking his teeth every day and all the dumb stuff he does. But it's not like we're changing the dial. We like Mike. You know, we hate Mike, we love Mike, all that back and forth.
Bingo.
Unbelievable.
The San Antonio Spurs, Dave. What do they say about him?
They're boring.
They're boring!
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Lux of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans! And a pleasure to have you here for the big Wednesday show. So much going on out there. Good to have you with us from our little studio here in Santa Monica tonight. Boy, oh boy, we have really had a lot hit the news waves since we last left you, and we'll break down a lot of that with our friend Kevin on the Cape in Hour 1. And there's an outside chance we'll be joined by our friend Umer in Rockland for Hour 2 to cover the NBA and the upcoming All-Star Weekend. But right now, we just will recap what's already happened, and it's quite a lot. It's quite a lot. So, oh my goodness. I'm just right now what I'm doing is I'm typing in the next show thing. I don't have a producer to do all the type all the words and do all the dirty work for me. I do this all myself. So there you have it. It's certainly been a breathtakingly big week all across America for a lot of reasons. Yesterday you probably heard the news that Jon Stewart is leaving The Daily Show after a 16-year run on the program at Comedy Central. Pretty impressive stuff. And, you know, people on the right-wing news networks can downplay it all they want, but it was a pretty big deal, and it's going to be tough to see him go. I wasn't really that familiar with the program, but I would come in and watch, you know, here and there. And Jon Stewart was good. He was funny. So that's going to be one we're going to miss in a few months when he signs off. Television has lost a few icons over the last few years. Regis Philbin among them on the live program. That was a while ago, actually. You know, they've lost some guys from other elements of television. Who else did we lose? Well, they lost Rosie O'Donnell on The View, but that's obviously not as big a deal. But this is a big one. Brian Williams is leaving because NBC suspended him for 6 months after he had fabricated numerous stories on the air on the NBC Nightly News. That's pretty bad, but he's out for the moment, and he's 6 months without pay, a really harsh punishment for what was bad, but it was just very interesting for Brian Williams, who just happened to be a pretty likable guy among many people who watched him. And that's just too bad that it had to end this way. So he's out. No NBC news with him for a while. And among other topics, the deaths of two college basketball coaching icons, Dean Smith on Sunday, and today, Jerry Tarkanian, who in many ways changed the face of college sports and was not afraid to go there. A lot of coaches were too stuffy and wouldn't go there. He went there. And he took a team like UNLV to a national championship. And I believe the year was 1990. With an up-tempo style of basketball and a hard-pressing defense and athletes he recruited with no limits. That's pretty something. And he was a character, as many have said in the press on this day following his death. And let's, you know, I don't want to overshadow the death of Dean Smith, who was just a consummate gentleman, an incredible human, class individual, and just an amazing leader of men, as they would say. But many had regarded him as almost like another father, those who would go through his program at North Carolina. And he really had just a tremendous run of successes himself. Two national championships, and what did they say, four Coach of the Year awards. I mean, he recruited some amazing players, and I mean amazing Hall of Famers. Michael Jordan, James Worthy, just to name a couple, but unbelievable talent for over two decades, maybe longer than that, in what had really been one of the great coaching runs ever. And it was sad to see him go. And apparently he was losing it mentally, and he left our planet a couple days ago. And now another coaching icon leaves us in Jerry Tarkanian, who did it his way and similarly successful. It's really just it's a different world right now because those two have left our planet. But now entering our planet and ready to roll is America's favorite moment in sports talk podcasting.
To the dance. It's time for random questions.
Good stuff.
In the city with Kevin on the case.
This is going to be quite a program tonight, and we really need every minute of this hour. And if we can, let's do 2 hours, depending on if anyone else pops up. So let's bring in our friend Kevin on the Cape to talk a little bit about college basketball right now. Kevin, how's it going tonight?
How are you, sir? I am very well. I am under a large blanket of snow, but my spirits are good. And I'm looking forward to chatting with you.
Very nice. I hope you have a fire ready to go as we warm you up with some stories and other shenanigans here on the program. Really, it's just it's been quite a week for basketball. Wow.
Big week for college.
Unbelievable.
In the worst possible sense.
Yeah.
My long since passed Czechoslovakian grandmother used to always talk about deaths and they happen in threes. And when I saw it, when you texted me about Tarkanian, I was like, wow, that's number two. If I'm Louis Carnesecca or John Thompson or Bob Knight, I'm doubling down on my life insurance.
What about Bob Knight? He's not a spring chicken either.
No, he looks terrible.
Yeah.
But I don't want to, that was a lame joke, and I admit it, but.
Yeah.
By the way, Louis Carnesecca's not looking any great either, but. Yeah, they college basketball. It's interesting how they lost two legends of their game, who could not be more opposite.
True.
You couldn't have drawn that one up between, and I'm sure if actually those two guys sat down and had dinner together, they'd be great friends. Who knows? Maybe they even were. But as far as their public persona and their path, even though Dean Smith's past is, some people tend to not look at the beginnings, and they always focus on the negative with Tarkanian. But it was quite a interesting week for them. They lost two really good coaches, two guys who gave us tons of great memories and great moments. But yeah, two totally different characters as far as the NCAA is concerned.
It's really something, you know. It shows you that there are many different ways to field a winning team. And reading about both of these guys, you really get to witness some of the masterminds at work. And the stories behind both are both just so fascinating, but for different reasons in each case. And I think It's funny you mentioned how they're polar opposites. They really are. I mean, it's like it was kind of interesting reading about how people had regarded Tarkanian. Oh, he's recruiting all these criminal guys, which, you know, maybe that's a little overblown. Maybe it isn't. But you think of that, and it just shows you the stark contrast of his style of teams and his guys, as opposed to the kind of guys that Dean Smith recruited as well, which he would kind of – and then you had one guy who was kind of a character, another guy who was just more of a low-key guy. And then you had one guy who challenged the NCAA, another guy who was beloved by him, I think. I don't know, because Dean Smith was before my time. I think you might be more qualified to really comment on this than I would, but you're absolutely correct. It's very interesting to see how essentially two polar opposites, but what they had in common is that they really had well, it's interesting. I think what they had in common was their commitment to building better athletes and better people. I think that's what he really did. And people who came out of the UNLV program, you know, they went on to have pretty good careers. I mean, it's unfortunate what happened to Greg Anthony, but he was good. And he was a good broadcaster, as a matter of fact, before you know what happened went down. I think we addressed that last week. Well, so, you know, I just thought immediately of the early 90s.
Yeah, that's very minor in Arcadian history. You could look up Lloyd Daniels, and you'll be... You could read for days about Lloyd Daniels if you don't know his story.
No, you're absolutely right. I think Greg Anthony's actually on the low end of the.
Oh, big time! $80 to ask a undercover cop to dress up and whatever. That's nothing.
No, that's so minor. So minor. He'll be. I think he'll be back on TV eventually. I think. I don't think that's gonna.
Oh, absolutely! This is not a big deal.
No.
Yeah.
No. Well, just in case you guys don't know,
they're totally different. Tarkanian was completely in your face with the NCAA and called people out on all their bullshit, which was terrific for someone from the 70s and 80s, and he finally caught up to him. You know, actually, when he had his greatest success was when it was over, when it was ending. A lot of people don't remember that. 1991, the two greatest teams he ever had. I mean, the walls were crashing around him. There was investigations ongoing after they won the first title, and the memories are faded or what. But I was never more of a college basketball junkie than from 86 to like 94, where my friends, we had events around big college basketball games. It wasn't all-star baseball games. It weren't football Sundays. We had events around Kenny Anderson playing on a Monday night. We had events around UNLV and Arkansas playing with like five future pros. That was our thing. So what's amazing to me is people forget that UNLV was basically suspended after the first title. The NCAA was not going to let them play in the postseason the year after when they lost to Duke. And they made some sort of deal where they let them play in the postseason and Tarkanian would agree to resign, you know, later. It was a very strange thing going on. Had nothing to do with that team. It was like the 89 team or something, but it finally had caught up to him. And basically, his world was just closing in on him. Yet, he orchestrated two or three of the greatest seasons ever. You know, got Larry Johnson from junior college, Odessa Junior College, I think it was called at the time, and put him together with this team that was just unbelievable. That team, Dave, you were only 7 or 8, but I'm sure you saw a little bit of it, was so unbelievable. Stacey Augmon and Greg Anthony in college were men. They were grown men just beating down on these teams. And then Larry Johnson was just a freak in college. They beat that Loyola Marymount team with the high-scoring offense. And it's like they were scoring 100 points without breaking a sweat half the time. And then they just crushed Duke, just completely dismantled this team by 30 points and it went through. It was just one of the most amazing collections of talent, and That's kind of how I remember him. That team, the 90 team, where they just killed everybody. They had their one little post game with Ball State, I think it was at the time, but just we got together to watch UNLV play Arkansas. We got together to watch those kind of huge games with these. Just it was so exciting back then. You know, I was a kid who would like sneak out to. When I was a kid, I didn't sneak out to like clubs to watch bands. I snuck out to Grace the King and Archbishop Molloy to go watch high school basketball. So that era, that like 6 or 7 year time.
From, wow.
You know, we were going down. We were going down to see Derek Phelps play at Grace the King and Kenny Anderson to play at Molloy and All Hallows and all these other really cool places in Queens where. That was the thing for us, and a lot of those guys went on, like I said, Derek Phelps went to North Carolina, and we used to go to basketball camp, and he was 4 or 5 years older than us, and Kenny Anderson was the same way, and those guys were our idols, you know, and then we would find out about the coaches later, but those guys were what got us into all that stuff.
It's incredible. I mean, it's New York basketball at that time was just certainly at a really big high. I understand, you know, people would kind of jokingly refer to New York as the Mecca of basketball, but that really seems to cement that as a truth. So, I don't know. I mean, basketball.
And I think that time, it was college basketball. Sounds silly, but I was thinking about this today. That late 80s, early 90s was sort of the golden age of college basketball.
Yeah.
I know that sounds silly because it's still a young sport, but nowadays with the kids leaving after a year, it's sort of the coaches are, I don't know, it doesn't capture, I guess I mean, I could be older now too and a little more cynical or whatever, but you know, this UCLA set it up in the 70s, Indiana and those kind of things. And then the 80s were sort of just all over the place. I mean, the Big East starting to come to prominence. The late 80s and early 90s, so many good teams and weird teams, too. You know, Georgia Tech is good. And UNLV is good. And when I was a kid, I'm like, who the hell, what is UNLV? What does that even stand for?
And, seriously, right?
You know, that, you know, when my parents, you know, when the old, my uncle and stuff, it was, you know, UCLA, John Wooden, we knew that team. Indiana and Bob Knight, we know that team. And then, of course, the New York stuff. Then people started branching out and all these kind of – a lot of coaches come from New York, too. That's what I always think is another thing that people don't talk about. New York, they always talk about the kids coming out of New York, but most of these coaches came out of New York. Most of these coaches were high school coaches in New York and all that kind of stuff. I mean, we were – like I said, when we were going to the games, we would be watching the first and second rows just pointing out the coaches. At these games, you know, like that's Bobby Kremins, or you know, that's the North Carolina assistant coach. That was like our little fun sort of brushing with famous people. We thought they were famous, but
that's pretty good. You know, since we're talking about the early 90s in basketball, what was it that inspired you to become a Duke fan during that time? It was definitely quite a time.
Oh, my Duke story is pretty simple, and it was way before the early 90s. I was born in 76, Dave, so, and I always played baseball as a kid, just naturally was a good baseball player. I never played basketball at all, and then I think 6th or 7th grade came along, and I went from, literally, Dave, went from 5'2 to 5'10 in 2 years, and in 6th grade, I'm almost 6 feet tall. And some fathers said to my dad, this kid's got to play basketball. He's almost 6 feet tall. He's 11 years old. And so my dad said, okay, fine. He knows nothing about basketball, but sure, let's go try out. So I went and some team picked me. And I was a disaster. I didn't know how to dribble. I didn't know what a zone for man-to-man. I had no idea what these guys were talking about. But I had this beautiful man, this just sweet guy, as my coach. And he said, do you watch the NBA? And I said, yeah, sometimes. And he goes, never watch the NBA again. I want you to watch college basketball. But that's how I want my teams to play, and it's more under the basket, and you don't know what you're doing. So want you to watch college basketball. So that's 1986, 1985.
Wow. Yeah.
And so Saturday, the first game of the week, that I said to my dad, hey, Coach Delvecchio says I got to watch college basketball, so we need to watch whatever college basketball is on this weekend. My dad says, sure, no problem. And it was Duke versus somebody, and I'm looking at this weird-looking coach, and I'm thinking, like, I mean, I was only nine or something, so it's Tommy Amaker, maybe. I don't know.
The guy with the comb over? Is that what you're thinking of? Or is that someone else?
The comb over?
No, never mind.
No, I'm talking about Krzyzewski.
Oh, okay, cool.
Krzyzewski was the coach.
Yep.
And they had they had Tommy Amaker was on the team, and I think Danny Ferry, but I could be wrong about the time. It's been a long time, but I saw the blue and white uniforms, and that's what our team's uniforms were. So I was like, okay, so this will be my team. And I had no idea if they were good. I had no idea who the players were. And then that was the year they went to, believe, the Final Four. And lost to Oklahoma, maybe, with I can't remember if it was the championship game or the Final Four. I think they lost in the Final Four that year to Oklahoma, with Stacey King and those guys. But that was my team, just because that was the first thing that I grasped onto, and it went from there. And then the year after that. And so, yeah, that's how that started.
Wow.
Long story.
Pretty amazing. Just put the TV on, and just fortuitously it ended up being Duke. That's pretty good. And that's before they were good, like we were talking about last week. This was before, or maybe 2 weeks ago, this was before Duke was like a powerhouse. So you really were on the whole way. That's pretty good. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. So, well, Junkie, I mean, it's definitely a sad time for college basketball. I mean, it may be quite some time before you see anybody like those two again, start a legacy such as that. We have Krzyzewski in the league still, so we do still have
and
that.
And the best part about, I was trying to think about something that sort of tied these guys both together, and one of the coolest things that I could think of was how they were both so accepting of black players in their youth, which is sort of an afterthought now because, you know, three out of every four players are African-American. But, I mean, Tarkanian was playing at Long Beach State. There was, if you really read about the history of college basketball and you really get into it, and I did this 10 years ago. I read every book I could find. If you really read, there were, people had black players, but there was sort of an unwritten rule where, I don't want to sound aloof about it, but they would say, you know, you can't have too many black players. There was an underwritten rule, sort of. It was just understood about it. But Tarkanian was that guy who said, no, I'm going to get the guys who win. And Dean Smith was brought in black players in the South, which was even more risky. So you can be the cynical guy, which, you know, is totally fair, and say, well, they just wanted the best players. They wanted to win games, which all basketball coaches want to win games. But they cared about improving their own little world, their own little, you know, they knew they weren't going to change the world by having a black player play at North Carolina or at Long Beach State. But it was giving everybody a fair chance to prove what they were. And if they had brought in a guy who sucked or who beat his girlfriend, you're sitting on the bench. But they thought they both wanted to give everybody an equal chance to succeed, which I think sort of is the one thing that tied them both together, even though, like we said, they were opposites.
And it's really incredible. And I really can't say enough about how much I appreciate what they've done from that respect, giving other people a chance. And it was interesting to note that in Dan Wetzel's column in Yahoo Sports today about Jerry Tarkanian, he notes that Jerry Tarkanian had some second chances himself. That's kind of how he grew up. He had to kind of work his way up, and he needed his own second chances as he was going through life. And so he could relate. I think that was something that players, by all accounts, could appreciate and respect, and they loved. And all their players were just absolutely fully 100% behind both Karkanian and similarly in North Carolina, their players fully behind Dean Smith because they were treated like, well, I mean, first of all, they were treated like humans. They weren't treated like meat. That goes a long way. But further, they were respected as individuals and given a chance. And I don't think that's really valuable. And I just can't believe how, and I was reading exactly the same thing you were as far as the unwritten, it seemed like, I guess it was unwritten, I don't know, it was written in some places, but the unwritten, the rule about you have to have white players on the team. I mean, how absurd is this? Remember that rule that they had in the 60s and 70s where they said that you couldn't start more than X black guys on the team, like on the starting lineup at the same time on the court. It's like, this is the stupidest thing in the universe. And people accepted it.
It was going to tear America apart, Dave. We can't have
so dumb.
We can't have five black guys play.
Oh God!
And sell their five. That's crazy.
I mean, yeah. Now you're.
Yeah, this is why sports is valuable because they have men and women who at some place. To break it down to the simplest thing, they just say, fuck it. You know, I'm going to do what I think is right. And eventually people follow suit. And that's a good thing. That's one of the good things about sports.
Yeah, and I know that ultimately when people break barriers and they start to change the rules around and change the definitions of what's acceptable and what's not and changing convention, a lot of that is just because they want to get an edge and win. I get it. I mean, but that's sort of the point. It seems to me that I think the art of competition and winning should supersede the stupidity of social convention and bigotry. I think that should overpower the other because in the end of the day, what difference does it make? And I agree.
Yeah, it comes down to the long, simplest question in the world, and it's why. And someone dares to ask why. Wait a minute, this athletic director at this school president says, "Well, you know, you're only supposed to have one black guy on the starting team," and some coach says, "Why?" And the answer sucks, and he laughs at the answer and he goes, "Screw you, idiots! I'm doing it my way." And more people should be like those guys, and more people should ask why. More people should demand an answer to that question, and if they don't like that answer, they should do what those guys did and pave their own path. And most people are better for it.
Certainly. It's really interesting. You know, going back to college basketball itself in the 90s, we may not see that kind of competition again. And you noted it from the beginning. It's not just level of basketball. It's the type of teams that were involved. I mean, you may never see Loyola Marymount amount to anything on a national level for the rest of our lives. And so I just thought it was a special time. And you look back and it was like a unique time. And I was reading about it. I'm like, really? You know, we had Seton Hall in a championship game. It's like, just stuff that blows your mind.
That 89 team was amazing.
I've heard.
You had the difference. The biggest difference, I sometimes I'll tune in to college hoops now. The biggest difference I've thought about is you had men playing back then. Especially the UNLV. I always go back to, I can still see myself watching the UNLV. I know it's silly because it was even a tournament game. But UNLV went to play Arkansas, 1-2. In Arkansas, the whole 40 minutes of hell, Nolan Richardson, Todd Day, Lee Mayberry, and UNLV comes in and they just had this thing. And we watch that game and there's six or seven pros on that court. And I can still see, I'm looking at my friends, there was this little crew of like five or six of us who would watch all these big games. And I looked at them and I can still see myself saying, this is big boy basketball. This is real intense. Every play was intense, and these were they were college kids, but these guys had been through a lot. You know, they came from different backgrounds, rough neighborhoods. The coaches had been through plenty, And that, I don't know, it's funny how I see so many Duke games and so many different championship games and watch all that stuff. But for some reason, that game was just, for some reason, like the peak of it all. It was, I think, it was 91. I think it was the 91 team that was undefeated. And that was like their first, they always used to say, you know, the Big West wasn't that good and they didn't play anybody. They went into Arkansas. Arkansas was number two and they are number one. They beat them by 10 or 9 or something, but I know, for some reason, that game always just, there's like four or five college basketball games that I will never forget where I was and where I watched it, who I watched it with, and that's always the number in the top five.
That's a pretty impressive run. I mean, you bring up Nolan Richardson, who had a nice career of his own, especially at Arkansas, bringing him to a national title in 1994. Is that right? Yeah, 94. That's a big year for Bill Clinton, too, because that's his team, because... he's in the office. And, you know, that's pretty good.
It was against Duke, Dave.
Oh, that's right. It was against Duke. That's right. Wow.
They were going for 3 and 4 years.
Unbelievable.
The only problem was that Duke team had Grant Hill and a bunch of scrubs, so they really didn't have a chance.
Well, I mean, it's kind of tough when you to go from the 92 team to that is definitely a market. What's the word? Reduction in talent, I guess. I don't know. Whatever you want to call it. Really is pretty awesome to chat about it all again. I shall remind everybody as we continue our random questions hour with Kevin on the Cape. First of all, my name is Dave Medina. I hope you're enjoying it tonight. And for those of you who are watching us on YouTube, please, if you can, join our new chat room. It's an IRC chat room. So if you use Trillion or Pigeon or any program you want, if you use Firefox, just get a program called Chatzilla, and you can join us right here.
What the hell is Pigeon?
Pigeon is the name of, and it's spelled P-I-D-G-I-N. It's just the name of a chat program. So, like, you can do you can do AIM, you can do a Google Talk.
No,
on
I gotta
there.
Get one of those.
You can do. There's a lot of stuff you could do, just about every protocol, but IRC, an ancient protocol, is one of them. And I just think that we went to a new chat engine this week because I honestly felt like the blogtalkradio.com website is hideous. It is impossible for a lot of people to get on, and I just think it's rough. Like, once you get in, you have to, it claims you can't authenticate. It crashes all the time. It's slow, and I just never really was doing it for me. So I've been trying to search for alternatives for the last few weeks, and I finally found one that is funnily a blast from the past. IRC chat. We did get a couple people on it tonight. Gator is on the chat with us. So you know.
Nice.
That's a big one, because we'll get Excellent. Some good questions. Yeah, he's bringing up some of the classic guys. I think he brought up LMU, Hank Gathers, Bo Kimble. You talked about them already.
Oh, yeah.
The late Hank
Gathers from Saturday, yeah.
Yeah. Sad day, wasn't it? Oh, God.
That was crazy, yeah. I still remember that, too. And then I think that offense was amazing. We used to watch those games, too. I think there was this guy... Gator probably knows, but I think his name was Jeff Fry. But everyone always talks about Bo Kimble, which was awesome. He took his first free throw left-handed. But there was this kid, he was this white kid, I think his name was Jeff Fry. This guy was just unbelievable from three, and they would just run teams out of the building. They were this kind of possessed team. They weren't. Hank Gathers was amazing. That's the other thing that people forget. You know, it was like this is the guy they rallied around because he passed away on the court. But he was one of the best players in the country. So for what that team did without him, just if you remove the whole fact that he passed away and just say, you know, take this team, take Larry Johnson off UNLV, take Christian Leitner off Duke, and they're going to still make a run to the Final Eight and the Final, you know, they were just... It was just explosive. It was so much fun to watch. Granted, if you're a fan of defense, you would just throw up in your mouth and you would.
That's a good point.
It was just get the ball as quickly as possible in half court and take a shot. But these kids were wild, and they had that something behind them, which of course came out of completely tragic event, and their best player and their best friend died. But as kids do sometimes, they made a real positive of it, and I think, and when you say Loyola Marymount, people smile now. They think it, they remember that little run they had, and all these kids coming together, and they turned something really dark and depressing that could have been the end of all of them, and they kind of came together, and they had a good run. They had their moment, you know. Not many people can say that they had their moment in front of the country. You know, they had something that all those kids, whoever, even the scrubs on that team, all those kids will remember that, and I'm sure they get together and talk about it every few years. They've got that little thing, so they can hang on to that. That was a great, great story.
Pretty cool. Yeah, that's, I mean, anybody down their best player making a run like that is very, very difficult and extraordinary when it can happen. So it certainly was great. I'm telling you, man, all of these things, you know, I think we going through the years, that Kentucky Duke game with Leitner and that crazy shot at the last second. It was simply the greatest era of college basketball, especially with a tournament, there ever was. I mean, it was never more competitive, and it was never more diverse in terms of, like, the type of schools involved, and it was never more dramatic. I mean, you know, think about how many storylines you had from 19... What do we say?
So many storylines. Even, Dave, even if you wanted to talk about Dean Smith, you know...
Yep.
May he rest in peace. His two titles were arguably the two... out of the two biggest brain... freeze cramp moments of any athlete ever had.
It's amazing.
Being a title
game,
except for some reason, Pete Carroll decided to wipe that all away last week. But up until that, you had Freddie Brown throwing the ball to the guy in the wrong jersey, not even, you know, like 30 feet away from the basket, just pooping in his pants when, you know, Patrick Ewing's just sitting there going, give me the ball, the game is over. And then Chris Webber decides, first I'm going to travel because I forgot how to dribble. I've been playing basketball since I was three. And then I'm going to call a timeout when I don't have a timeout. And I've got a collection of Juwan Howard and Jalen Rose and Ray King, all these guys who were, and I'm looking, you know, Chris Webber's looking at Eric Montrose going, well, I can destroy you at any time, but you know what, I'm going to call a timeout and I'm going to get a technical foul and blow this game because this is going to be great. So, great as Dean Smith was, and I don't take anything that's nothing to do with him at all. This, you could be talking about a guy who never won a title.
Wow.
They won their two titles on these just pooping diarrhea in your pants plays that just were beyond belief. You're looking at it going, I was talking about that with people at work about, like, oh, can you ever imagine someone screwing up like Pete Carroll did? And I go, yes, I've seen it my whole life. This happens all the time. I mean, sometimes it's not a coach, sometimes it's a player, sometimes it's an official. I mean, you were 3 years old, but you've read about the '85 World Series where the guy was out. Game six was over.
He's way out. You know? Saw the replay.
You know, told the fate of the Royals and the Cardinals. It was done.
Mm-hmm.
We've all seen that. We've all seen Pete. You know, so everyone's going so crazy about Pete Carroll, which I know is terrible and was awful, but I've been going on this entire time, and those were two examples of that. I mean, sometimes you don't want to go crazy because they're college kids, but, I mean, Jesus Christ, you know, you're wearing a Georgetown jersey. You play with these guys for 2 or 3 years. For some reason, you thought the best move was to pass it to a guy in a powder blue jersey when you have the best player in college basketball sitting in the post just waiting for the ball. Yeah, that's okay. That let's just forget about that.
Unbelievable. No sympathy for the Cardinals in that instance, though. Two reasons. One, that they heartbroke, and the Dodgers lost in heartbreaking fashion to them. Granted, I blame Tommy Lasorda for that. You can't walk a guy, and we went over this. You can't walk a guy with an open base and two outs in the big inning like that. The team had like one guy that could hit the ball out of the ballpark, and they pitched to him. Dumb. Anyway, moving on. with Kevin on the Cape. Another reason I don't have sympathy for him is because I'll tell you what this. You probably saw this firsthand. I probably saw less of it first. I was really small during these years, but well, great. I forgot his name already. The Cardinals manager. How could I not know
this? Whitey Herzog.
Thank you. That's a total brain fart. I've known the name forever. Well, he's such a tightwad, and he is such a D-bag, and his gamesmanship, or whatever you want to call it, he's just such a... He just seemed like a prickly guy to me, based on what I know. It seemed like he had no sense of humor at all. And I just think he was very easy to root against anyway, even if I wasn't a Dodger fan. So those two things made me feel quite unsympathetic to the Cardinals in the latter 80s. I had no issue with the Twins beating them in 7 games. I had no issue with that. I mean, that was a bad call. That was a bad call in the Dechinger call in 1985, Game 6 at what was then called Royal Stadium. It wasn't called Kauffman yet. It was a bad call. It was a terrible call, and it was bad. But nonetheless, I never felt too much sympathy for the Cardinals. And as you can see, the Cardinals went on to win additional championships later in their franchise life. But it was a bad call, and it was a bad move, and you don't want to see that. You definitely don't want to see somebody taken out of the game by a ref. And that's like the difference here between that and the Pete Carroll thing and the other guys. In the other three instances we just discussed, the players decided the game. And maybe in one case, the coach decided the game. Here, an official decided the game. That's never, never good. That's the worst. I think it's... I mean, the other ones, are you can kind of laugh about it. Like, this guy is so dumb. But the umpire deciding a game is never good. Never good. I hate it. I think that's the worst way to decide a game. So, certainly, the Cardinals had their chances in 85. So, you can't feel too sorry for them. But you just don't want to see that. Like, you don't want to see an umpire decide a game like that. And yeah, you could say, well, they still could have gotten the out. But still, imagine how that affects you if you're playing in that game. Would you be in your right frame of mind knowing that you had an out and they took it away from you?
I hope you would, only because you're conditioned your whole life, you know, to get the next out, to make the next play. Yeah, I would hope you would, but yeah, you can't help but think it had something to do with it.
I mean, it's inevitable. It's just tough to imagine working your way out of that, you know, emotionally. Now, granted, ultimately, you really should be able to do those kind of things, and some teams do. Like, the Reds lost in a pretty...
Plenty of teams do, you know, and plenty of people do. We've all played sports and stuff. I would never compare any of us to guys who play professionals, but we've all been screwed by officials and...
Some teams can bounce that back.
It's the guy who can sort of isolate each play and move on to the next one, and that, I don't know, they go down in the history books. But yeah, you don't want to see an official decide thing, but they're humans. They're part of the game. They're just as, that's the other thing, Dave. They're just as much a part of the game as the first baseman and the catcher and the third baseman. That's what the game is. You have to look at it that way. The umpires and the officials that are on the field, they're all one. They're all part of that entire game, and they're all human beings. So to separate them and say someone should be above making a mistake where, well, you know what, that right tackle completely whiffed and the quarterback got killed. Everyone makes mistakes, and the officials they're just as big. They're as big a part of the game as the players are. And I mean, that's they're not separate. They're not a separate entity to me. They're all part of one organism. They're all part of the same game, and they all make mistakes. And they all do good stuff. You know, 95% of the stuff is good, but they all make mistakes, and that you have to accept it. If you're going to agree to play by these rules and agree that these officials are going to be in charge of enforcing these rules, you have to realize that these are human beings. These are men, and they're not perfect. So that part of the game to me has always been, like I said, it's part of the game. That it's all, it's everything. It's the coaches, it's the players, it's the officials, it's everything involved.
Yeah, no doubt. It's everybody's human. I mean, refs are human, broadcasters are human, guys who do the nightly news are human.
They are human. Oh boy!
All right. Ooh. Brian Williams.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. How do you even respond to something like that, Junkman?
That's a bad one. I mean, I don't give really much attention to the nightly news these days, or as they used to be in the old days, where, you know, you had three stations in the 80s, and that's where you got your information, of the 60s, 70s. Now there's just so many outlets. There's cable, there's the internet, there's just so many things where I never, even Katie Couric or, you know, Tom Brokaw, I know, even back then, when the internet was starting to explode, and there's less of importance, at least to me, on the man, on the person. You know, everyone's kind of reporting the same few stories, which to me makes this story worse. Like, there's no reason to make this crap up. You know, there's no incentive. You've got one of the three or four network jobs that everybody in your industry wants. I don't understand the reward or the, you know, I always look at things like risk reward. I don't understand maybe I'm naive, but I don't understand the point of doing that. Like, you're already at the top of your field. If he never told this story, even if the story was true, if he never told it, people would still tune in. They respected him. I don't know why, but they're told to respect the guy on TV. It makes no sense. I don't understand why people do things. I don't understand just flat-out dishonesty, I guess. Maybe I'm just too naive. I don't understand this, especially with that. People have come up with some other stories that he exaggerated, you know, about rescuing a dog in a fire or something, which, whatever, who cares about the stupid dog? But you're looking at these veterans and these people who come back from these wars, and people who go over there and fight, and whether you believe in these wars back then or now, you still have to respect and hold the people who go out there and fly a helicopter or put the gun on and shoot the guy across the thing. And you have to stand in awe of a kid, whether it's right or wrong, whether you believe it or not. He's over there doing what he thinks is right, protecting you and that stuff. And to make that stuff up, to try to equate yourself to those kids who are in the line of fire, and you're just trying to be one of them. You know, I'm in it with them. No, you're not. I mean, I don't remember hearing that story when he first told it. So I can't say that I was skeptical about it when I first heard it. But looking back on it, I just don't get it, Dave. Maybe I'm just, I don't understand what he was doing. And I think he should be finished. I don't even think this should be. When I first was reading about this stuff and the fact that it was confirmed, not only by the Stars and Stripes website, the military, you know, newspaper and everything, and then the people who worked with him and the people on the plane, I don't understand the hemming and hawing. You're done. I think it should be over. You know, I don't understand. Not only do I not understand why he did it, but I don't understand why they're dragging their feet. The man should be fired. Let's just move on. Let's get somebody who tells me the truth. That's really what you want.
Right. Well,
I don't know how you
Ego, I think, plays into it ultimately in a situation like that. I think people just want – he just wants to get a little attention in that spot, and I really have no answer, honestly. I just – you never truly know what's inside one's head.
Yeah, and you always had the kid in high school or the kid in middle school who told a story, and you listened to the story, and it was kind of exciting, and then after a while you're going, there's no way this is true, you know?
It's weird.
And you would never believe him again, you know, when you found out later. And this is, it's sort of, that sounds making it a little simple, but you'd be like, you know, you're full of shit, man. And it's what we deal with all the time with people on, you know, politicians on the news and that kind of stuff. And you would hope the guys, there are some people out there who have a little more integrity. And when that's gone, it's over. I don't want to hear from him again.
And, wow, yeah, I'm not sure if he'll be back on NBC at this point. So,
and it's not true. And it's not true. What I got on my email 2 days ago, it was not true that I told him to go fuck himself 4 years ago when I worked at NBC. That is not true.
Wait, who said that? that's another fabrication, right?
That's a total fabrication.
Total fabrication. All right.
I told him to go to hell, not go fuck himself. Completely different.
What was the context of why did you do this? What did he say to you?
No, it's completely untrue.
Okay, the whole thing is just the way. Okay. Forget it. Okay, let's get to some random questions because...
Somebody confused the story I told. They confused the Mater Shad with Brian Williams.
Yeah, let's not go there. Hey, I mean, after all, Junkie, this show, if it starts getting... If this thing starts to grow an audience, we don't want to go... We don't want people going back to these shows and then... getting us in trouble for any reason, so we should be as accurate as possible with these kind of
right. So for the record, I've never met Brian Williams, but Ahmad Rashad can go fuck himself.
All right, good deal. Fair enough. Let's get to a couple of random questions from our friend Gator, and here they are. Question number one. Oh, I'm reading off the wrong thing. Question number one from our friend Gator is. Is it true that ancient Egyptians used IRC chat to send blueprints to each other when they built the pyramids?
That is actually not true, because the aliens built the pyramids.
Everybody says that. Are you one of those believers?
Well, they help them. They all work together.
It's like, there's no way it could really happen without modern technology.
No.
All right. Question two. That was one I didn't want to spend too much time on. It was funny, though. Question two, though. If everybody hates ISIS because they're douchebags, can't every country commit 1,000 troops and get a force of like 20,000 on the ground to wipe them out? What do you think?
That's a terrific question, and I don't understand why it's taken this long.
I know.
it's confusing to me why... everyone always gives us crap because they think we get involved in things that aren't our problem and that kind of thing. I don't understand why this isn't everyone's problem, where there's just a group of people just killing people and going to neighborhoods and taking them over and killing their women and cutting people's heads off. I don't understand why that's not the whole world's problem. And that's a perfect question. Why doesn't every country just say, let's just carpet bomb these people? And I know this is ridiculous and their innocent people will get killed. That is going to happen. I understand that. And I know that getting all these different countries to agree on something is completely impossible. But it should be every... That's why when that thing happened and the king of Jordan said, and he just started sending planes in there and they just started bombing the shit out of it. That was cool to me. I said, finally, someone is... When they, you know, they killed their pilot, they burned him alive, whatever horrible thing they did. It shouldn't take that to get countries involved, but I guess that's the, I don't want to say positive about a poor man being burned alive, but if it's going to take that to get some other people involved in this, just let's go, you know. It's, I don't I don't know what are we doing? What are we just letting anyone decide to run over a neighborhood and kill their people and take it over? I don't understand that. There's a lot of things I don't understand, apparently. I think that's the topic of the show tonight. I don't understand the world. I don't understand it. Somebody needs to explain it to me, I guess.
Yeah, sometimes it seems simpler to us than it does to everybody else, and it's just too bad that it doesn't. The common sense doesn't seem to rule the world in that spot. So that's a tough situation. We have a little bit of an update on our method of connecting to our chat room. It's actually even easier than that. You just go to... So for those of you who have been struggling with the client, you don't even need a client. You can go on the web. All you have to do is, for our purposes, just go to webchat.freenode.net. So, so go to the channel. The channel is DITCOW. You just go to DITCOW at webchat.freenode.net. It's really that simple. So we even have taken a simple process and made it even simpler. So good luck with you all getting on. So, okay, that was too long. I should go back to my other thing. Join our chat on IRC, and the channel is #DITCOW. So I'll repeat that. Webnode.freenode.net, channel DITCOW. That's it. That's all you got to do. And you can join our chat. Put any username you want. Put in a password if you want to. And then you can join our chat just through the web. And it's just that easy. If you want to do it on mobile, then you can still get your IRC client and you can join our chat tonight. Again, chat's on IRC, webchat.freenode.net. webchat.freenode.net. That simple. I know that sounds so complicated, but I'll post a link on Twitter too. So just stay with it, and I'll let you jump on. It really is nothing to it. There's really nothing to it. And so Gator has actually made it even easier to jump on. So here is so Junkie. Let me go ahead and write this on Twitter. Did you have any random questions for me as I set this up?
Well, obviously, I'm really more interested in the fact that I'm not sure what I saw yesterday. Was it, did you make a hot dog out of a, I couldn't really see the picture. There was some sort of bacon, and was there hot dog involved? I can't remember what you did. It was a taco, but it was a hot dog?
It's a hot dog with pizza toppings on the top. I call it a pizza dog. So,
the pizza dog. Damn it! Sorry. I knew there was some. You're becoming some sort of alternative chef thing. Everyone's doing something with the food trucks and the fancy food, but you're going back to the basics. You're taking two great American culinary arts and putting them together. Which is really nice.
It's pretty awesome. I mean, I was visiting my parents over the weekend. My sisters were there, and my younger sister, and well, they're both younger, but the youngest sister and I were coming up with ideas for dinner. We didn't really want to go out. We was kind of tired, and you know, we just said, all right, we have some hot dogs. Let's just make some pizza dogs and. You know, it just seemed like a fun idea. I didn't think it was really going to go anywhere. I just thought, it'd be fun, you know, it's something different. And this thing blew us away. We couldn't believe how good it was. We had these slices of cheese, which happened to be I think it was a mozzarella provolone hybrid. So it's like both. Can you even imagine combining two cheeses in the same cheese? Well, they did it. Whoever this company is with the cheese, that they made this up. And these slices were really, really good. So we started with that, put it on top of the hot dog. We would have put, like, marinara sauce on top of it too, but we didn't have any. But if we did, I would have used it. And then on at the very end, I put pepperoni on that, and we baked it in the oven. So we grilled the hot dogs a little bit. You put the buns and the hot dogs in the oven with the cheese and the pepperoni, and then just tastes absolutely amazing. One of my friends was not sure if there was a hot dog under it, but it was. There was. It was good.
And my only other random question was, did you watch the Grammys, and what did you think?
Yeah, I watched a couple pieces of it here and there, just a couple parts of it. I generally don't watch the show, but our friend Andrew Jacobson, aka Coach, watches the Grammys. So, I mean, it's about what it usually is. It's some interesting moments, though. I think there's some pretty good performances in there. So, I'm not going to be a complete hater.
I have another question.
Okay.
I have another question. Are you going to watch the 50 Shades of Grey movie?
Oh, good Lord. You know what I called that movie
it's
today
about,
in an email to friends?
Just in case you're wondering, Dave, I think it's about sex. So I don't know if you should go.
There's nothing gray about that. I called it 50 Shades of Overrated. But
not exactly sure what kind of sex, but just from the articles I read, it seems like it's rough sex, which seems like it could be risky.
Yeah. Have your fun. I mean, I don't know. I mean, if it's good, it's good. Whatever. It's not going to draw me to the theater right now. Good question.
Yeah, here I haven't been to movie theater in about 15 years, so that's not going to go either.
Certainly. You know, I think I really got to thank Gator. I was actually looking for a website version of this link. So this is a fortuitous moment for many of us here in the city having a web link to this thing. And it really is easy. Like, if you try it yourself, you can jump on our chat too. Like, if you get your iPad and go to that same address, what you do is the following. I'll show it to you. So you go to webchat.freenode.net, part one. The nickname is just your name. The channel is just hashtag DitCow. And then there's this like picture thing you have to authenticate just so that they prove that you're not a bot. So they, you know, like they put a number in a picture inside of a picture, like you're like seven, like, you know, 7XY, and you just have to type in 7XY, and then you connect that way. The same, you know, you've seen it all the time on ticket sites. Like, you see the ticket site, and
yeah, regardless, if someone like Gator and someone like I can figure this out, neither of us are, you know, Mark Zuckerberg. I don't understand why the people are having problems with it.
I don't know.
We are two of the more older, you know, less tech savvy members of our world. I don't understand why this is that difficult.
Oh, I think I got it. I just posted on Twitter for those of you who are on Twitter right now, at DitCow. By the way, in case you missed it, that's something I actually want to. I want to put an at DitCow. I want to put like an at DitCow logo, like an at DitCow tag, right in the corner of the screen here on YouTube. I want to put it like right over here, the upper right, right here. And I want to do that because I want to put that up there so that people always know where to go on Twitter, so that they realize we are on Twitter all the time, and you can go to @DitCow to get the particulars. So let's check in our chat and see if we have any other random questions tonight. I think we're getting some traction on it, though. I do.
it'll take some time, but I think you're right. This is a good move for you. I think it's time.
It was a necessary move, and it's so much easier to use. Like, once you figure out what the links are and everything, it's just so much easier to get in. Like, you don't have to do this weirdo account and register with anybody. Just go in, you know? It's that simple.
It's a lot easier, which is funny. Since the last, like, month, when you post your Facebook thing about the show, I don't know anything about the computer anymore. I used to know a lot about it. I know nothing about it anymore. And then I just realized I can share that post that you made on my page.
Yeah.
I'm sure you knew about this. I didn't know about this until a month ago. I used to I used to just hit that little like button when I liked something. That's as far as I ever did with Facebook. If I saw something that was cool or interesting, I hit the like button. I didn't know what the other buttons were. But anyway, so I saw this share thing, and then I noticed that it was on my page. And then people were making comments and sending me messages about it, and then some 16-year-old kid who was in the high school, you know, here, who's friends with someone who worked for me or something, like, oh, I listened to your show last night. He came to the store. I'm like, who the hell are you? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, oh, no, it was great. You were talking about the Super Bowl, and that was really cool. He's like, he's like, I'm going to listen to it next week. I'm like, it was a small example of, I know I'm clueless and stuff, but it was a small example of, take some time, learn a little extra thing. I know this stupid share button at Facebook isn't breaking any ground, but for me, it was a brand new thing, and we've got a whole bunch of new listeners now because of it.
That's fantastic. People
don't know you, but they know me. They don't know you, but they know me. So they look at my page, and it's interesting. So
it's good enough for me.
People just took some time, figured out your new system. I'm sure it will take off.
Junkman, if you can continue sharing the link, I'd be most obliged. That would be really great. You can get more people to listen to it each week. And, you know, if even like three guys I know were to share my link, that could potentially triple the ratings in the show, in our show hits. And so that's really cool. I think it's really cool. I noticed that a lot of guys don't listen to the show live, which is fine. But it really doesn't matter. It doesn't really affect me when the people actually tune into the show. It counts either way for me and you. So that's very cool. But I like doing it in real time, because I remember when I used to record the show, and it was nice, but I felt like it wasn't organic. This is organic, and so I would rather do the show live, even if nobody listens to it, because we can produce everything in real time, and it just for me, it's easier to function this way, and you can get a better rhythm for what you're doing. You ever notice that guys who this is a funny topic, I guess we better change the topic on our chat room, but voiceover artists, and I have so much respect for voiceover artists, but they're such perfectionists. They got to get every syllable right in things that they read. And unfortunately, the people who write the things they're supposed to read have no clue how to do audio production. None. So it's very difficult, because sometimes they're forced to read the thing that they're given, even if they don't, if it doesn't make sense, even if it doesn't sound right, they have to make it sound right. So it's very tough. Like, when you're doing something live, you can control what you say, and you don't have to overthink it. And so I often find that if you're doing something live, you've got a better shot. And I think it's really, you'll notice that, especially if you've had experience doing a show like this, you won't be stuttering, you won't be continuously recording things over and over and over. I like doing things in real time. Even if I do record something, I try to be as real time with it as I can, if that makes any sense. So do you sense a value in doing a program live on the air?
Absolutely. I mean, as far as, I think I can, I mean, I've always been able to tell whether I'm listening to the radio or something, mostly the radio, obviously, but you can always tell when something's been pre-recorded, even if they don't tell you it has been. Especially nowadays, too, Dave. Maybe when I was around, you know, in that world, before all the instant media and all the instant news, there was some value in pre-recording something. But now it's stuff to be so dated. You know, you could record something in the morning for a show that night, and so many things have happened that the show that you've pre-recorded is obsolete. So I think nowadays, being live is more important than ever.
No doubt, no question. It's
It's funny. I always find it curious. I know in the old days it was more practical, but I always find like that Letterman is filmed, that is taped at 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock, whatever they do. and showing at 11:30 at night. To me, that's, even now, it seems silly. It seems, it doesn't seem authentic anymore. I don't know. Maybe one, you know, like I said, maybe it's more practical. People, you don't want to have guests come in at 11 o'clock at night, but I don't know that part, or I don't know that I was listening to some clips of that, of supposedly Bill Belichick is on Letterman tonight. So WEI was playing all the clips of it beforehand. And, so I started thinking about that. I'm like, wow, they still really record that, you know, 6 or 7 hours beforehand. That seems a little outdated.
Well, I think they do that just because they've got to add, maybe they got to add some stuff in post, and they just want to make sure if something really bad happens, they can edit it out, you know? Because, you know, the kind of people they have on the show, a lot of big celebrities, if there's a bad moment, they can work a way around it. If I forget the reasons, but I'm sure they have their reasons. I tend to agree, though, that, you know, ultimately, if you do a program live, it's just as good. I understand people really want things to be perfect. They got to do retakes. They got to add in. And this is true. Like, I think they actually add in, like, laughter. They add, I'm not even joking. Like, they add additional artificial laughter and clapping to the show. This is, I don't think that's, I think that's a reality. I really feel like, you might not notice it until you've actually gone to the same show yourself, and you're like, there'd be like a couple jokes that just don't do anything, and you're like, you hear like, yeah, ha, ha. And then, but then the guys in the studio, they'll throw like some laughter from another show and like toss it in, and then it's like, ah, you know. I think that's what it is, as much as anything, trying to sweeten the production.
Those are dead people laughing. Laugh tracks are dead people laughing.
I've heard that. In many cases, it is, especially the old style one, laugh tracks.
I think that was Andy Kaufman. I think I stole that from him.
Yeah.
He despised the laugh track. Dead people laughing.
It's a funny comment, and it's kind of interesting. It's kind of interesting observation. So, I don't like laugh tracks, but I do like live audiences.
Oh, it's awful. The laugh track is so terrible. It's so awful.
Yeah,
I remember going to I think it was like Universal Studios, mm-hmm. or something when we were a kid. Went to Disney World, and you would go to. They would take you to a place where they filmed shows, or they showed you how it was made, and all of a sudden you'd see this applause light. And everyone's laughing, and everyone's clapping, laughing, and me being a little rotten, like 9-year-old, looking to my father, going, "That wasn't funny. Why are they clapping? Why are they laughing?" And he said, "Oh, it's because they told you to." I'm like, "Well, that's stupid. Just because they told me to laugh, I'm not going to laugh. That wasn't even funny."
That's funny. That is crazy. I mean, that's meaning peculiar. I don't mean it was literally, haha, I laughed at it, but that is pretty peculiar. I don't know. It's well, I mean, that's why they say it's studio production. And I think people are, they say, you got to clap really loud. It doesn't sound authentic, but it comes out great on television. You watch it like, oh, wow, this has got so much energy. And you realize later that the energy is in a lot of ways forced. And premeditated. Oh. All right, Junk. Yeah. So, no, but I have enjoyed comedies filmed in front of a live studio audience and other productions filmed in front of a live audience, provided that they don't overdo it with the sweetening, so to speak. And I like it because it reminds me of live theater, being in the, you know, like a Broadway production. Or being at a concert, a stand-up concert, as an example, and that's a theater production. That's a theater environment. That's a theater setting, and so sitcom.
Yeah, exactly. And mistakes happen, and they're interesting, and they're captivating. You know, you go, like you said, you go to a concert, and you don't know what's going to happen. You're in the audience, and the band could be fighting with each other. You know, the guitarist guy could. You know, the string could pop off his guitar and they're running frantically around. It's cool. It's exciting. You know, not everything has to be perfect. And, you know, this little bottle of perfected TV, you know, stuff. Now, this is, it's an experience, a human experience. It should have its flaws.
Absolutely. Yeah, and so, you know, that's the thing. People want to kind of make themselves look good, and so, you know, we don't often see the true, you know, organic.
Gator knows more than anyone. We, you know, we used to go to Grateful Dead shows, him and I, not together, because we didn't know each other.
I was wondering about that. Like, have you met him? Like, I didn't know.
No, not at all. But we used to, we've both been in the presence of Jerry Garcia, where he forgot the words of the songs he used to write. Songs that they used to have to put a teleprompter on the stage so he would remember the words. And, you know, it didn't make for the greatest show, but it made for a really good experience. It made for you to look at this giant, you know, figure and say, he's just human. He makes mistakes. He doesn't get the words right. I mean, he wasn't the only one. You know, there were plenty of people who screwed up the words of their own songs. You're singing along, and you're thinking, you're crazy. Wait a minute. It's supposed to go like that. What is he doing? He missed the whole verse. And then you laugh about it with your friends afterwards. You're like, ah, oh, it's a good show. Yeah, he totally confused those words or said something weird. Or he was playing trucking when they were playing Sugar Magnolia. Like, what was going on there? But I don't know. To
seriously?
Me, it's all interesting.
That's too funny.
It's all fun. And, oh, yeah, especially towards the end. I don't know what was going on half the time on that stage.
That's pretty wild. You know, people make mistakes. I think it's really great. And nothing is perfect the entire way through. And even the greatest of the greats, the absolute greatest of the greats, Pavarotti made mistakes, I'm sure. You know? Placido Domingo, I am positive, made mistakes as well.
Especially,
everybody has.
Especially the other guy.
Especially the other guy.
The other guy.
The third
the
guy.
Other
Who's
guy.
That?
The
Isn't
other
that
guy.
Other guy? That's some. See, they started with some other guy first before we did. You had Placido Domingo, Pavarotti, and some other guy.
And the other guy. The other guy was a disaster.
Yeah. Seinfeld did
he
a little bit of
other
that other guy. Who is that other guy? Nobody knows. I don't remember his name. Do you?
It's Domingo, Pavarotti, and I think his name was William Nelson.
There was about 3 seconds where I remembered the guy, where I read the guy's name and I remembered it, and then that was it. I was done with him. But
I want to say his name was like Carreras or something, but I could be wrong. I'm sure I'm wrong.
We have a comment from our friend Andy in Seattle. He just joined us in the chat. He says, this chat looks like it's being run in the late 80s via an Apple 2GS computer. That is funny. That would be especially true if you went through that site link that we recommended earlier. But it works great, though. I mean, it's I'd rather have an 80. I'd rather have an old ancient protocol that works rather than a slightly fancy.
How does he even know what something looked like in the 80s? Wasn't he like 3?
No, he wasn't. He's the same age I am. We're the same age. We were born in the same year, so. I'm very familiar with the Apple IIG and the Apple IIC, the Apple IIe, which was still in use in schools when I was there. So it was an old computer by then, but it was in use. And I remember the games that they would have on there. The Apple II had some pretty awesome games. Like, there was one with a helicopter in it, and it was very colorful for its time. And people were amazed by the color. It was like, whoa, the color. It was like 16 colors. Like, it wasn't that many colors, but everybody was like, whoa, it's in color. It's so... That really drove everybody bananas. So I think we do remember. I mean, I remember certainly. I can't speak for Andy specifically, but I certainly remember the Apple II. Any of the Apple IIs. Like, not the Apple II. Not the original Apple II from 1976 that didn't even have its own bezel. But of the other ones, I remember very well. So I guess I'm familiar with the Apple II. How about yourself?
Not at all.
Not at... You don't remember an Apple? Junkie, you're not serious here. I'm sure you've seen it. Okay. What about a Macintosh? The original Macintosh with the tiny screen and the black and white graphics.
No, not really.
No? Well, I guess you weren't. I know you said that you're not a huge technology guy, so I'll let that one go.
Well, no. Well, the late 80s, I was in grade school, our Catholic school. We didn't have computers there. Well, yeah, I didn't have computers in high school, Dave. Dave, we still had typewriters when I was in high school.
I remember typewriters. I do. I remember the typewriters, yeah.
I didn't take it, but they still had a typing class. I wasn't in it, but I know they had one.
I remember typing. You typed on typewriters for a typing class? That's crazy. How can you get any proper instruction on that thing? I've always been.
It sounds ridiculous. Not at all. But we did not have computers, cell phones in high school. I didn't have a cell phone even in college. We had a computer in college, but we had email, but you could only email people in the school, but with the same .edu address.
Inside of campus. I remember you saying that. I remember this very well.
Yeah, so it sounds absurd because I'm not, 55 years old. I'm in my 30s. But mm-hmm. It's a big gap between your generation and mine.
Yeah. Well, I was fortunate that when I was in elementary school, we did have some computers. There were those tiny little IBM PS2 machines, and they had about, I don't know, like a 9 or a 10-inch screen, and maybe a little bit larger than that, and that's some color. Like, I remember being a lot of blue on the screen, and we had typing programs on them, and I had a lot of fun trying to type on those machines. Pretty fun. And that's kind of how it started with me and typing and computers. Like, I started getting really good at it. And, I mean, I'm not great with typing, but I tend to find myself typing fairly fast, especially compared to those who are not usually typing as much, They look at me like, wow, you're just typing all these words. And it's true. I can type quite a few words. I'll demonstrate this. Okay. So I'm gonna write a different subject line on the YouTube right now. Just to show everybody how quickly I can type. Alright, so I just typed something right now, and I wrote down Clippers woes with injuries on the screen. So then I'm going to say, and I'll switch it again. Motley Crue. Oh, I said cure. Okay. I told you I'm not great. Concert tickets. Name is something you'd want me to mention on the show. So let me just go back to the random questions tag. Put that back. Okay. Okay, guys, so let's continue with the random questions. So if you have a question for us, go to... What was it again? That site is called Web... It's called webnode.free... Hold it. Webchat.freenode.net. Webchat.freenode.net. And go to the DITCOW channel. So hashtag DITCOW, and you'll jump onto our chat. That's the way to go. Enjoy. We'll see you there. And so let's go to the next random question tonight on the program. Okay. Let's see what else we have. I'm on. Andy's on. Gator's on. Junkman, are you on? Are you on? What's the temperature? It's like 2?
It's about 12.
12. Oh, my God. 12 degrees.
I can't. Yeah, and it's... We're getting 6 inches, I think, 4 to 6 inches tomorrow and Monday, another 12 or something. It's a complete disaster right now. It's going to be zero, and that's not even counting the wind on like Sunday night. It's awful. People have finally had it. They're just walking around. It's like it makes you physically sick. So just walk from one end of the parking lot to the other. You can't breathe. It's brutal. There's ice everywhere. It's not fun at all. I don't know why I've had it. I don't know why I live here anymore. I finally, it's broken me. I'm finished. I don't want to live.
So now you want to move out again? Give it a month. You'll be fine. Give it a month. You'll be all right. That sounds but no, either way, that sounds pretty rough. And so I do not envy you right now. That is a tough spot, no doubt, for the junk man. Okay, so let me ask you, let us chat a little bit about, yeah, seriously, let's chat a little bit about the Clippers, because I just wrote a whole thing on the Clippers in the show description. I don't know if you're familiar, if you're up on the NBA this year, but I do need to talk about the Clippers just a little bit, just to flesh us out so that we have a so we can justify the show title on the screen. The Clippers have had a rough week, to say the least. They've been on a brutal road trip that no one really expected them to win a lot of games on, but this was bad. They got completely humiliated by Cleveland. Then they got humiliated by the Toronto Raptors in a game that many expected them to win. And then they got humiliated again after Blake Griffin in the morning was ruled out for the game because of a staph infection in his elbow. So he didn't play. And the Clippers just got torched by Oklahoma City. They return home. Tonight they play the Houston Rockets. And they did rebound from that Oklahoma City game, and they won huge, like by just an enormous amount of points at Dallas, despite not having Griffin in the lineup. DeAndre Jordan had a huge night with 27 rebounds. If you're wondering, that is a career high for him, and it was second best in Clippers franchise history single game. 27 rebounds, that's a lot. And so the Clippers won that one going away. Now they come home. We don't know what to expect. They're going to be down a guy. They still have Chris Paul. They're going to play the Rockets tonight here at Staples Center. The Rockets are down a big one. They are not playing Dwight Howard in this game, but James Harden's playing very well right now. So this is going to be a tough one to evaluate. So tonight we'll see them play. We will see who wins. If you're following the Dave cover train, the move would be to take Houston. I haven't jumped on that yet because I just simply don't know. This is tough to judge. It's very tough to judge. I mean, because you could see the Clippers winning this one anyway because both teams are shorthanded. It's just going to be a tough situation right now. So Clippers midseason woes. That's the topic right now here locally in L.A. And let me tell you, as far as the biggest sport, as far as the two big NBA teams, this is as good as we have right now in LA. I think the Clippers are going to be fine. It's just that they're just not as good as maybe the ceiling may not be as high as one might think. The big problem I think with the Clips right now, the defense is just not there. The perimeter defense is not, it's just not doing the job, and their bench is pretty underwhelming. So that's what I have in the Clippers right now. I don't know if anyone else wants to chat and remark on that. You can go to our chat room. Again, what is that link again? Webchat.freenode.net, the DITCOW channel, and join us. Otherwise, random questions the rest of the hour. Ask a random question, any question, as long as you're interested. I would normally say write the word question followed by the question itself, but really, I think at this point I can sort out the questions, so I don't need to do that anymore. So again, webchat.freenode.com, is that right? No, .net. And then hashtag DITCOW is our channel. So we hope to see you there in just a bit. Okay, let's go to a random question. Here it is from Gator. He says, I can't stand Jamal Crawford. I don't care if he makes his next 50 shots. He still stinks. That's part of the problem. You know, they've got a bunch of guys, and Crawford is among them, who really look for their own shot. I don't think it's really a team, even though they have Chris Paul. When he's resting, you get a lot of guys who are trying to chuck shots. That's one. Spencer Hawes is another. It doesn't seem like it's a together team. And so that is definitely it. You know, there are some rumblings about the Clippers getting Josh Smith. It's probably for the best they didn't get him, because that would have been a disaster. That would have been another ball hog and looking for his own shot. And it just, to me, that, I think they're going to win games. It's just that in the biggest games, where are they going to be when the games count? So But, you know, having said that, I think the one team that they can match up against really well, believe it or not, the Warriors. And they've really had their way with them recently. Their last meeting, if I'm remembering this correctly, was during the Christmas season, Christmas night game at Staples. The Warriors had a huge lead on the Clippers. They took the lead back in the second half, and won handily. So that is always, that's the funny thing about the Clippers. They have that matchup, but, you know, it's interesting. I'm not sure how cohesive they really are right now. And their defense is certainly not a Doc Rivers defense. It's not as defensive a team as you remember from Doc Rivers' other teams, including the Celtics. So, hard to say. Yeah, Matt Barnes. I mean, he doesn't really have any. To call him a chucker, I mean, what else does he do? Yeah, he's a chucker too. So there's a lot of guys that just take individual shots, not really into it. I mean, it's kind of tough for me to get wrapped up in it now, but they can win their games. But because of this and the fact that their defense is just not that great, especially off the bench, you know, the other teams are just going to have they're going to hang around against this team. So it's tough to judge that against a weakened Houston team right now. So I'm certainly not even going to touch that. But I think that in a matter of time, that those errors will play themselves out. So there you have it. Kev, let me ask you, anything you wanted to say about the Clippers or the NBA, or do you just want to move on?
Oh, that was the NBA portion of the show brought to you by Dave in the City.
Yep, that's true indeed. Getting a little thirsty here at the mic. Hope you guys are doing all right. We'll continue then with the random questions. So we'll go back to it. It would have been interesting if Boomer was able to make it tonight with us. That would have been an interesting discussion. I would have been interested to see how his Bulls were. I don't know what the deals with the Bulls. Well, I think the Bulls aren't that bad. I really don't. But they certainly are far from a perfect team, and they've been really inconsistent all year. We'll talk about that later. We will talk about that later. Man. Gator's making some great points on the Clips, too. He writes that Barnes is a chucker, fourth highest scoring in the league. Defense doesn't have to be as good. No, it didn't have to be, like, lockdown defense, but it has to be better than what it is. No, I mean, he's not disagreeing with me. I'm just saying, like, he's just saying, like, they don't have to do much to improve. And I agree. As our friend Andy in Seattle says, like, Austin Rivers is on the team, too, which is a little, I don't know if we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but classic case of nepotism in that situation. Tommy was with us on the show 2 weeks ago, and he's like, this guy would not even be in the NBA if it wasn't for Doc Rivers. Interesting point. It's up to you to decide whether that's true or not, whether you agree or disagree. We'll see. All right. So, Junkman, we return to random questions. Let's see if we have any other questions. You can write the word question followed by the question itself. But webchat.freenode.net, put in any name you want as a username, put in Ditcow as your channel, and we will take your questions for the rest of the hour. So, Junkman, our dream is realized. We have you for 2 hours tonight. How you feeling after 90 minutes?
Wonderful, Dave. Very, very, very good.
I like the energy. It sounds like you're still got plenty of gas left in the tank. That's very good. So we'll continue.
Absolutely.
All right. So my DirecTV's out. You know, I tend to put a game on while we have the show going, just to keep up to date on what's happening in sports. And we are having just the worst problems with the satellite right now. It might be my box, might be my satellite line, like the cable, but it just doesn't work. It's just gone out and comes back, comes again, went out. I don't know what's going on. It's weird. So we'll have to see what's up. Whew, I'm tired. Okay, so anyway. Did you want to discuss the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition. That is coming out this week in stands everywhere. And the biggest news, a couple things. I mean, often they will feature athletes on in the magazine, which I think is a very welcome move. And it's actually a pretty neat tie-in. It's a good cross-promotion. UFC's Ronda Rousey will be representing, among other people, this year from the athlete department. And a plus-size model will be featured in this edition of the swimsuit issue.
Wow. What is a plus-size model? What does that mean?
In this case, it means someone who looks like a normal woman. If she's plus-size, then all of us are obese. It was just so comical. And they show a picture of her. She looks amazing. And let me just dig this up because I had this queued up. I just think it's hilarious. She's not... I'm very happy. I'm very, very happy to hear about a plus size model making the cover. The lady's name is Robin Lawley, and she was also featured in an Italian edition of Vogue magazine. But just look her up in your iPad, and you'll realize this lady is not plus. Okay, well, take your time with it. And I just think it's absurd what people think of women in the magazine, in the print media. It's just like, this is outrageous. It's like, this is plus? It's almost minus for me. I mean, I'm like, geez, boy, tough crowd. It's like, I just got a kick out of that. I mean, I was pretty excited about the prospect of a plus-size model making it on the magazine. I think this is great. This is fantastic. I just think it's really good. And it is fantastic. And she's fantastic. But I think this is just like regular. Like, I don't even think it's plus. It's just like, it's average. They might even be below average. When I say average, I don't mean literally like she's less good. I mean to say she's not like, I don't see, I'm the talk. This is so Adonis of me to go into this. But my point is.
What's her name?
Let me pop this up again. Okay. I'm getting conflicting reports. I see an Ashley and I see I see Ashley Graham, who I guess, and Robin Lawley. Oh, there you go. No, it is Ashley Graham. I'm so sorry.
My insurance rates are probably going to double.
But Dad, you've
I gotcha.
Allstate, with accident okay. forgiveness.
I see what's going on. Ashley Graham isn't an ad. Robin Lawley's in the actual magazine. So the one in the actual magazine is the one I'm talking about. And so she's, you know, you look at her and it's like, wow, she looks amazing. And she does. But if they consider her a plus, I'm like, man, that's, man, these are harsh All standards. Right, okay. These are harsh standards if she's plus. I think she's perfect. Like, yeah, I guess if there's a size perfect, I think she'd be size perfect.
I got it. You mean by plus, she's larger than the average woman in that magazine, I guess is what they're saying?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that says that she's size 16. I'm like, really? I'm like, I have no idea what the size. I think this, the vanity sizing is just nuts. It's like, why don't we just use inches like we do with men? Like, you know, use inches. So it's not so subjective because they can change them around too. I've heard that they change them around. It's like, I have no idea what a size 1 is or a size 12 or a size 15. I'm like, I'm completely out of the loop with that.
Right. Basically, you're admitting that you've never actually spent any real time with a woman because you don't know her pant size or her. I mean, I'm not some sort of aficionado on those kind of things, but I know what size clothes my girlfriend wears only because
right
if I go to get her a gift, I'm not going in blind. I'm gonna look at the tags on her existing clothes and shop accordingly. So just because that makes for a better present.
Well, I mean, that wasn't really where I was going with that. I mean, where I was going with that is basically to say that the sizing system in general is just, it's very, it seems like it, the way it's set up, it's kind of funny. Like, they consider her a plus size model, all right, but she looks tremendous. I guess that's my point. And I guess what I'm saying is that.
No, she looks, I just looked her up. She looks terrific, but, yeah, she's bigger than what is normally portrayed in that magazine.
Yeah, and I guess my point is the trade in that magazine is crazy. It's like, wow, we, the other ladies are kind of scrawny, just to give you an idea. So, yeah, that's about it. So, I applaud the move. I think it's really cool that they're expanding the scope of the of beauty in the magazine, and I think it's a positive message for everybody. It should be a good time. So, I'm into it. I can dig it. So, that's about it. That's about all I had. I mean, I know my mom's size, so there's that. But I know women's. I do know women's size. It's just like. I don't know. I'd rather change the subject. Can we move on? Let's move on. Next.
We can move on.
That did not go well. I was really hoping for that to have a little more juice. I could talk about Ed Sable of NFL Films. He died recently. It was just this week. The father of NFL Films, the one who made it happen. And pretty good. Pretty wild stuff. But, you know, I'm sure we all are familiar with NFL Films. I think they're really an iconic part of our life, and they made the NFL what it is today. I'm not saying anything that hasn't already been said. I think it's pretty decent fodder. Good stuff, as I would say. Sad to see him go. His son died before he did, though, which is also sad. I'm sure you've seen Steve Sable. He introduced a lot of the NFL Films. So that was a big one. That's a big loss for NFL Films. Granted, you know that Ed Sable wasn't doing anything necessarily active, but what he represented was amazing, outstanding, and it really set the groundwork for the NFL's image the way, I don't mean literally the image, but for the theater and the grandeur of the sport. And a lot of it was set up in part due to NFL Films. So it's pretty cool. I like NFL Films. They're really dramatic, really exciting. A lot of wildness and wonder to these films. I just think it's really cool. So it's sad to see him go. And he leaves behind a great legacy with the format of highlights. I think it's just really cool. So that's my tribute to Ed Sable. No comments on this at all? Nothing?
I was surprised that he was still alive.
Yeah.
That's like 100.
I'll grant you that. I didn't realize he was still alive either, and the day it happened. But, you know, nevertheless, I felt it was worth bringing up, so I think it was really... No, you're right. I mean, I certainly, when I read about him, I'm like, oh, I didn't know he was still alive. Okay, well. But nonetheless, it's, it's a loss for the NFL, no doubt. Okay. That's about it. I'm kind of done. Are there any topics you'd like to address with me tonight?
What do you got going for Valentine's Day, dude?
This is just getting worse. What do I have for Valentine's Day?
Big party, maybe like a little like singles party or something?
No, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go out to bars on that night. It's an opportunity, even though it's probably the worst day of the year for a single.
No, you gotta face it.
I'm gonna go out and I will conquer on this day.
Yeah, exactly. That's the attitude you gotta have.
I like it. But you can see I'm far from attractive at this stage. It'll be tough sledding for me, but I would give it my best shot. So we will see. And it's not worth thinking, at least try. It's worth trying. And it's a 3-day weekend. It'll be great. It'll be fun. I'll have a good time and just go out and see what's out there. Like you said, I mean, if I'm single going out to a bar, there are going to be women there who are single too. And they will be in the same boat. And that's something we can share together. I think that's cool. So it'll be fun.
Absolutely. I don't believe in a lot of things. as we've discussed over the many years, but I do believe in, at some point, nice guys will finish first. So I think that's what you have going for you. At some point, it's going to pay off.
Well,
you're a good
in.
Man, you know. I see it all the time in my store. I see these, you know, women with these guys who just look like us. They're just normal guys, and they're just super nice guys, and they work hard, and they're honest, and at some point, if you separated them, you'd say, "Holy cow, this woman is so out of his league." But you know what? At some point, they realize that it's more important to be with a good man, an honest man, you know, a guy who's going to take care of their family and be with them. So I believe that eventually people like us, you and I, nice guys, eventually it will pay off. Basically, I guess the point is I believe in karma. I believe that's really all I believe in, that good things happen to good people. And it may take a while, but it eventually does happen. So, you know, I think, because I know the kind of guy you are, eventually it will pay off, and it'll be good.
Well, I think that's a great sentiment, sir. And I think we just have to look at yourself,
Jerry,
as proof positive of that. You've got a very wonderful woman.
Jerry Piscataway, on the other hand, who knows?
You know, it's interesting, though, but deep down inside, he wants that. He wants a nice relationship with a nice girl. He's mentioned that to me a couple times.
Well, he's not going to find that where he's hanging out. Trust me. I know where he's hanging out.
I would be not at liberty to really comment on that, but certainly we wish him the best wherever he is tonight. So we'll see how that
goes.
Absolutely. Good deal, man.
Look at Tom in New Jersey, you know?
Yeah.
Really good kid.
Yep.
Kind of a clueless kid. Got it together. Got an unbelievable girlfriend. You know? Good things happen to good people.
Yeah, I think everybody's time. And they say that everyone's been told this, and it seems to come out true for a lot of people. Everyone's moment will soon be at hand, so that's cool. And so, you know, a lot of opportunity out there, but how can you get it if you don't try?
So you take the bull by the horns on this weekend. You know, you can turn it around on them. You can be like, I'm not out celebrating Valentine's Day. I'm out celebrating President's Day weekend. No,
there you go.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yep.
Let me
yep.
buy you a drink for Abraham Lincoln. Whatever.
Yeah.
Make them think. Make them think. Keep them on their toes. Don't do the whole cliche stuff.
Oh, no. You don't want to get wishy-washy like that anyway. That is a deterrent to do that. So, no. You got to think positively. Totally. It's all about positivity. And when you're out and you don't have obligations, that, to me, pretty positive. I like that very much. And I enjoy it and relish every moment of it. I do. Good deal. Junkie, I'm afraid.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You can certainly take me in that example. Eventually, it does pay off. Eventually, you know, you find an all-star and you're like, holy crap, how does this woman even want to keep talking to me? They realize the good things about you, so it's good. It works.
I love it. I love it, buddy. I do. I think it's pretty good stuff. And I'll tell you what. Man, we got 11 minutes. But at this time, at this point, let me see if I get any text random questions. What do you think? Let's look it over.
Nice.
See what we got. Okay, I got a random question from a friend of mine. She asks, you should ask the listeners if they own any ripped pants. Do you own any ripped pants, junk man?
Ripped pants? Like ripped jeans?
Yeah, exactly. Ripped jeans.
Well,
oh, man.
You know, I'm currently wearing pair of jeans that has a giant hole in one of the knees.
Wow. All right.
I didn't buy it like this. I didn't intentionally rip them. Sometimes, you know, I'm one of those guys who can go between I can fluctuate 30 pounds in a year. So sometimes the jeans may be smaller than I planned, and sometimes I put a hole in it because my thighs are a little fatter, and all of a sudden it rips. And, you know, I usually just wear them around the house. I don't really go out in them. They're just sort of, they're comfortable because they're so worn in. But, yeah, I am currently wearing a pair of jeans that has a giant hole in its knee.
That's fantastic. And I own a pair of ripped jeans as well, ripped jeans, but they were not purchased that way. I just think it's hysterical that people buy jeans with rips, and it's like, guys, just wear them. You'll get the rips. Just wait.
Yeah, and it's way better. It looks, you know, it's a little more authentic that way. Don't buy the hat that's ripped up. Wear your hat. Wear it around. Wear it in the rain. Wear it when you're playing softball with your friends. And it'll come weathered, and it'll break up and look cool. Don't just buy some stupid thing with a rip in it.
It's funny. It's funny how that became a thing. Like, of all things to profit from, intentionally ripped jeans. It's like, huh?
Right.
It's like they're already ripped, so we've already reduced 75% of the value before I buy it. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. You much more respect someone who does the work, wears them at work, wears them around, and wears them out, and then they look cool.
Word up. My gosh, that's funny. Okay, so I do have one last question from Gator. This will probably be his last question, at least I think it is, for the night. He asks, do you miss George Carlin?
Oh, every day.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Every day of my life. I actually, I'd say, probably 4 or 5 times a week, I pop up YouTube, George Carlin YouTubes, before I go to sleep. That's pretty much my, my sort of go-to at night, sort of contemplative, relaxing moment, and I'll throw up one of his HBO specials. I guess the answer is no, I don't miss him, because I actually listen to him almost half the week. They're still there, thankfully, for posterity. So maybe I don't miss him because I didn't know him personally, but I don't miss him because I got him every night. I got his wisdom, his humor. I'll still find stuff that the most amazing part to me is there's so much out there that there are times where I come across something where I think I know everything that he ever did, but sometimes someone will send me something, or I'll come across a skit that I never even saw, and it'll completely make me rethink a certain aspect of society or how he thinks about something, and sort of will always challenge my preconceived notions about things. So yeah, he's always around for me. Yeah, he's terrific.
Yeah, I miss him. I miss him greatly. I will say he hadn't been the same for the last maybe 10 or so years of his lifetime, but overall he was really one. Just he's irreplaceable, really. Irreplaceable.
Yeah, that's true. And I know that the last two specials, I even said it before, he sort of lost his fastball a little bit, but there are glimpses in those last two, especially that last one. The whole hour isn't great, but there are just glimpses of brilliance. If you can isolate certain parts of it, some of it were rambling and he sort of repeated some things he had done before, but there, that last one, when he was completely weird and he looked chubby, and that there's still such brilliance. If you look up the part about rights, rights and privileges, I think is sort of the name of it. If you look it up on YouTube, rights and privileges, and it was one of the last ones where he just completely just blew my mind again. And it may be the only really great, great part of that last hour, but it was terrific. And it was really, really mind-blowing and relevant, even though he was 70 years old or something.
Yeah, no doubt. Another random. So we have one more from Gator. And this is going back to something that has been brewing, really, really been brewing over the last quarter. And that would be the Saturday Night Live 40th Anniversary Special. This is a monster. It's a monster of a special. It's nothing like anything they've done before, because they are bringing people back that had never even have been decades removed from the program. So here we go. Question, last question of the night. Will you watch Eddie Murphy on SNL 40, the 40th Anniversary Special? The fact that he's agreeing to be on the show is monumental. I can't believe that SNL agreed to it. I can't believe he agreed to it. These guys had been so estranged from each other for over 20 years, at least, at minimum 20. I think it's more than 20. I think it's almost close to 30 at this point. It's amazing that he's coming back. So that's just incredible. I'm curious. I just got to see how it goes. But let's see. Let's get your take. Would you watch Eddie Murphy on SNL when he comes back?
I wouldn't watch Saturday Night Live if it was in my backyard.
But even like a special though, like because this is like a reunion. Like this is like all the moments from the.
I don't think it can be funny at all. That seems like it's one of the more kind of contrived. Saturday Night Live has been funny forever. It's not going to be funny for an anniversary. It's sort of like an old-timer. It sounds to me like an old-timer's game. These guys are... It's not going to be good. There's no way it's going to be good. They're not going to be their edgy... they're not going to allow them to be the way that they were back in the day. I don't know. I just don't see how that can be funny. Just because Eddie Murphy's around or whoever comes back, it's not going to have the same excitement or the same groundbreaking comedy that it did once. It's like I said, it's an old-timers game. It's a concert for some old guy who...
90 seconds.
It's not going to be funny. I'd rather see comics that I don't know about, comics I've never heard of, doing things that are interesting and against the grain. I don't need to see these old guys, these old wash-ups just coming back. That's not interesting to me at all.
All right. Well, there you have it. That's a no for our friend Jack Van. It's a yes for me. And that's going to do it. We're down to our last minute.
60 seconds.
Next year, I'm not going to go see it. I'm not going to go see some old greatest hits tour.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah. All right. I think the junk man has spoken. Anyway, it was really fun having you on tonight. And that's that. I thank you very much for coming on again. And wow, thanks for coming on for both hours. Hopefully, all goes well the rest of your week. Have a good one. Take it easy, my friend.
You got it, man. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, buddy. That's Kevin on the Cape. That's it for our show tonight. So thank you very much for listening. That was it for guests. So hope that you all have a wonderful rest of your week. Enjoy All-Star Weekend. I totally missed talking about it. The Mother of All three-point contest. Hope you come there. It'll be a blast. Take it easy, everybody. We'll see you next time.